We'll relay the rain report for 11-11-11 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with this week's rain report, available on demand from therainreport.com. Last week we brought you the first of two excerpts from a 2011 Dayton Hamvention talk by Pittsburgh, PA psychiatrist Lisa Sparr, who in collaboration with Austin Comacho wrote a book entitled World War II Radio Heroes. Ms. Sparr's grandfather, Robert Sparr, was a German prisoner of war in World War II. Robert's mother learned of his capture through what became known as the POW message relay. One of those listening to Radio Berlin and relaying health and welfare messages to American POW families was Flavius Jankowskis. We now pick up Lisa's story continued from last week.
I asked Flavius if he would share with us for the book what it meant to be a part of POW message or POW relay. And he said, during the 1930s, I developed a keen interest in amateur radio. I purchased a Howard 430 from the nickels and dimes that I earned on my Liberty magazine route. In 1940, I diligently studied the Morse code, the technical radio knowledge of that time, and the rules and regulations in effect. And I took the examination for a radio license by the FCC. I was assigned the call letters W3JAK, which I still use today. In 1940, we were banned from communicating with foreign countries. When December 7th, 1941 happened, all hamming was banned for the duration. However, I continued to monitor and listen to shortwave stations, such as the BBC from London, Berlin Radio, and programs from other capital cities. I was listening to reports of the war's progress from my home in Philly. At U.S. broadcast radio stations, many engineers were called into the service, and I worked as a replacement at one of these stations. It was during the time of listening on shortwave that I heard the POW messages over Berlin radio, and I started sending notices to families of POWs, often receiving a response of gratitude for the news. In mid-1943, more than 45 listeners, including myself, were organized by Mrs. Don Yant in Lima, Ohio, into a group known as Shortwave Amateur Monitors, or SWAM. Mrs. Yant assigned several of us to each night of the week to monitor the enemy radio stations so that no POW family would go without notice. Mrs. Yant also shared the latest in radio news, techniques, and member news via monthly newsletters. Following in the steps of the servicemen I was listening for, in April 1944, at the age of 17, I joined the Merchant Marine and started sailing ships for the war's effort. That's signed Flavius. Here's Flavius today holding a copy of QST. Here's one of Ruby's postcards. This is when she was trying to organize people. And she said, through the kindness of Mr. Lowell Walker, I have 27 names of you who are willing to send out messages and notices. We know there are many more of us. Can we organize and 10 of us send out messages one night and 10 the next, etc.? If we can round up 60 of us, that would have 10 for each night of the week. If more, we can divide it equally among us. I'm sure that if we are no less than 10, we could get the messages across all right. What do you think about it? Let me hear from you. If you're interested, state the night you'd be most apt to be at home listening. Signed, Mrs. Don Yant. Her name's Ruby. One of the gentlemen that Ruby had as a member of SWAM is named Sanford Lowe out of New York. Sanford Lowe sent many letters over the course of World War II. The one that he sent to us was handwritten. This is just part of it. It says, I sincerely hope the above message will be a source of help and encouragement to you. Very truly yours, Sanford Lowe. But this is the really, I thought, the most powerful part of the letter. Postage donated by Mrs. M.L. Ferguson of Lupton City, Chattanooga, Tennessee, as an expression of thanks for a message from her husband, Lester, who's a prisoner of war in Germany. This is the 873rd message forwarded by me since January 1st, 1943. So in 5 months, this man sent 873 messages. And the postage for our letter came from someone else who was really appreciative that he had sent one to her about her husband. Through my research, I found out that Sanford Lowe, over the course of the war, sent more than 10,379 letters to POW families like mine. I don't know that I've sent that many letters in my life, and that's even including email. So to think that this man hand-wrote all those letters is just astounding to me. Morton Bardfield, through my research, I found Morton. He was written in an article on the shortwaves. Jerry Berg had written an article, and he had referenced Morton. Morton did not write to my family, but he wrote to many others. He's still very active in communications today. He has a company both in Massachusetts and the Virgin Islands. And I'll tell you what Morton had to say when I found him.
You're listening to a talk by Lisa Spahr, co-author of World War II Radio Heroes, the story behind the POW message relays of WW2. We'll conclude this second excerpt from her talk in a moment. This is The RAIN Report, which updates weekends on therainreport.com.
He said, like most kids growing up in the 40s, my family evening entertainment was just an AM radio console. Most nights I enjoyed programs like The Lone Ranger or Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. For me, World War II was a distant struggle and a world apart. But that all changed on my 13th birthday when I received an all-band radio. The reality of the war entered my Dorchester, Massachusetts home when I began to pick up German announcers each evening on Berlin radio, reading in clear English the names, addresses, and messages of American prisoners. It would seem that no American could discover these important messages and just switch off the shortwave without sending a note to some parent that their son was alive, no longer missing in action. So it seemed very natural to me to mail out these nightly POW reports to the parents on penny postcards. He says, I couldn't afford the 3-cent stamps from my paper route earnings. During the war, I wasn't aware that anyone else might also be notifying the parents or wives, so my postcards became just as important to me as playing soldier or doing my homework. Knowing now that other radio listeners were also sending out notifications, I'm sure that no family ever complained about receiving more than one joyous letter. And he's certainly right. We received a letter that was written on a small piece of stationery, and the gentleman wrote at the bottom, please forgive this stationery for it's all that I have. And I thought to myself, does he realize what an amazing gift he's just given my great-grandmother? He could have written it on a cocktail napkin, and she would have been thrilled. It was really incredible to me, some of the letters that we received. This one was from Omaha, Nebraska. And I tried to find this gentleman, and unfortunately, I was just a few years too late. But I found his son, and his son tells a very interesting story. He says, the radio that my dad used is still in the family. Like many others, we would gather around the big radio in the evening and listen to Jack Benny, Fibber McGee and Molly, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, the serialized programs. However, as you've now discovered, my dad also listened to shortwave. And he realized that the Germans were announcing American POWs' messages and broadcasting them home. My dad took down the messages and the family information, and he attempted to get the information into the hands of the POWs' family. He soon realized that very often this was the only information the families would receive. On one occasion, the family address did not come through very clearly. So Dad did the best he could, but it turned out not to be good enough. His letter bounced around for a while, and I think it got into some dead-end type department at the post office. The letter ultimately came into the hands of the FBI. They became suspicious that Dad might be a German spy. He received a call, and one summer's evening, we were joined in the shortwave listening by an agent who obviously discovered the true state of things. I thought that was really interesting. There were some people that wrote to us that didn't feel comfortable giving us their name or their address. The first letter I showed you, it just was signed A Friend. And that one, I think, was from Frankfort, New York. Some people signed their name. One person signed A Loyal American. Some other people would write, I accidentally tuned in to German shortwave. One other person said, I have a message that may be about someone that you know in the service. Please contact me. So they didn't want to just relay the message at that point. They wanted to be reached. My grandfather served 26 months as a prisoner of war. He came back. He was able to see his mother for the remaining months of her life. And then he married his sweetheart. And they had four children. I'm his only grandchild. And I have to tell you, I felt very connected to him as I worked on this project for the last few years. Why were the Germans interested in letting the enemy know about the prisoners that they had? It's a great question, and somebody here may be able to answer it better than I. When I first found this story, I thought, oh, well, that was very nice of them to publicize these names. And then I met with people from the era, and they said, Lisa, it was all part of propaganda. They would say it in a very derogatory way. It was to boost their morale and demoralize our troops by kind of putting a feather in their cap about who they had captured. The American Legion magazine at the time warned you not to believe anything you heard over those shortwave messages and radio, but in fact, they were conveying accurate information. All the boys came home, and none of the other boys were prisoners of war, only my pappy. Unfortunately, of the 12, we lost the last one about 5 years ago. So none of that generation is with us in our family anymore. And I'll tell you, the cover of the book, my pappy is beaming with joy. And knowing him, I say he's doing that because he's optimistic about the years that he has ahead with his sweetheart and building a family and a good life for himself. But he's also very respectful and remorseful for those that didn't come back with him. But when I look at that picture of my pappy on the book, it reminds me I've never known a bad day. I've never had a bad day in my life. Because if you can be that joyous after 26 months as a captive, then I haven't known hardship. And so I am just honored to have known him and been with him for 11 years. Are any of the radio programs captured in the National Archives? My husband easily found this radio program that I was playing when folks were coming in online, but I don't think it was through the National Archives. I'd be shocked if they don't have it. I know that I am planning to donate a subset of our original letters and postcards to the Veterans History Project so that they have them and can use them as they wish. But I don't know about those audios. But they are freely available. I think he paid a few dollars for them, but they're freely available online. Smithsonian has them. And I'd like to make one note. Through my research, we received 70 letters, the Spahr family, but I have discovered more than 140 men and women around the country that were a part of this, men and women who sent messages to POW families like mine. I have them listed by state and by last name, and I have the addresses from 1943 of them all over the country. And I'm now looking for people to reach out to their representatives in their states to ask for congressional recognition for these men and women. I think that's an appropriate next step for us, as well as a documentary. So if anyone has an interest, certainly, that has the willingness to contact the representatives, you can even email me, and I'd happily send you the list so that we can recognize them. Even if they're no longer with us, at least their children could accept the honor on their behalf, or perhaps their grandchildren. So that's my next step, is congressional recognition.
And that concludes our two excerpts from a 2011 Dayton Hamvention talk by Pittsburgh, PA psychiatrist and author Lisa Spahr, talking about her book, World War II Radio Heroes. Kudos to those who were so diligent in their monitoring of Radio Berlin during World War II to relay health and welfare messages to the families of American POWs. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2011. Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with Rain, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.